Hi everyone. More than a month ago, on September 6th, 2021, was Al-Muqaddimah's third anniversary. This video is a bit late because first I was under the weather and then I took a trip to Mallorca. So I'm making this video now, marking the start of the fourth year of Al-Muqaddimah. Time has gone by so fast. Let's recap this year then. The first video of my third year was the Mughal Sultanate one, which was in collaboration with a bunch of other YouTubers. Then I started a new series on how Islam reached the world, which discusses how various parts of the Islamic world became Muslim. So far, I've covered Xinjiang and Kashmir. Hopefully soon, I'll talk about Southeast Asia and Western Africa. I finished my series on the Abbasids and am now doing a series on the Mughals. After them, I'm hoping to go back in time and cover the Delhi Sultanate. I also made a video discussing whether Prophet Muhammad existed or not. Spoiler alert, he did. Now I'm working on a video discussing how much and what we actually know about him. And also, the most important event of the year 2020 happened, Al-Muqaddimah got its silver play button. When the first year wrapped up, Al-Muqaddimah was at 13,000 subscribers. Then the second year wrapped up with 42,000 subscribers. We hit 50,000 subscribers on November 11th, 2020. And then finally, 100,000 subscribers on June 13th, 2021. So thank you very much for that. I asked for questions on Patreon, YouTube, Facebook, etc. And I got a bunch of really interesting ones. But since a lot of them were about future topics, I won't be covering those. I'll go through the rest now and answer them. Peter A. asked on Patreon which episode or episodes was or were the most fun and rewarding for you to make and why. Well, for me, the most fun episodes are the ones that I don't have to read a bunch of books for. These include videos where I just put stuff I already know in a script, like how to rule in the Islamic world episode, and also videos where I have to read research papers. Research papers are much more precise and easier to read than books, and you can read two or three in a shorter amount of time than you need to read two or three books. One example of that would be my video on the printing press. That one I actually made in under a week. I was having dinner and then all of a sudden the question popped up in my head and I left in the middle of it and started looking for answers. I went back and finished dinner though, if anyone was curious about that. Mehrab asked, also on Patreon, you've done a lot of videos summarizing people, places, or eras. Would you consider making essays that introduce or review the works of modern scholars or inviting them over for a podcast discussion or interview? How about narrating or collating essays and discussions by guest contributors, including members from your Discord server? And since you like to use a lot of maps, how about a video about Islamic map making? Also, what are your thoughts on how Islam and Muslim cultures are portrayed in historical strategy games? So that's a bunch of questions, but I thought I'll just answer all of them. A video about Islamic map making is on my to-do list. So yeah, that's coming and hopefully soon. In terms of inviting people, I do want to do that. I recently read Stealing from Saracens by Diana Dark, and I wanted to invite her for a discussion on the channel because I don't think I'm qualified to talk about architecture. She did a video with the Amir Stein Center channel, and so I was hoping to invite her. So yeah, hopefully someday I will invite scholars to talk on the channel. In terms of historical strategy games, I actually love CK3 for its accuracy in most things regarding the Islamic world. I'm glad that the Abbasids and the Delhi Sultanate are coming to Age of Empires 4. They're sometimes accurate, sometimes not accurate, but overall, I love it when games try to include Islamic empires. Oleg from Patreon asked, let's look into the future. You've reviewed a great deal of history of the East for us. Do you think the modern Middle East, North Africa, and Central Asia have something in their past they can use for their development, both economic and cultural, rather than importing Western ideas and technology? That's a very difficult question to answer. I think the world has advanced so much during the colonial era that it would be difficult for the Islamic world to advance without Western ideas and technologies. A century that we lost without technical progress wasn't just a century lost, but rather it had impacts that will exist for as long as the world does. Most of the Islamic world used to be nomadic and tribal, and those were their strong points. But now, nomads have pretty much been wiped out of existence, and the nation-state model has fundamentally changed how the world must work now. Certainly, these regions that were previously dominated by nomads are at no advantage. So I don't think that a future exists without Western ideas and technologies. What we can do is import them on our own terms and adopt them according to our societies. This is a natural process that has existed for thousands of years, ideas flowing between the East and the West. Theodore asked, in what ways has your outlook on the world changed since you started this channel? Well, for one, I have become much more cynical than I used to be. I didn't really think that everybody had their own versions of events. I just thought that we all had the same set of facts and based our opinions on them. But now I realize that everyone has their own facts even. This problem is just getting worse and worse in the digital era. So yeah, I'm not really optimistic. Another way that I think my worldview has changed has not just to do with my channel, but overall the left shift of my political beliefs or political ideology. And I think I judge people differently now. Historical and real characters, even people in my life, I judge them differently now within their own context, their own society. And also, I discovered that I have a Persian fetish. Matt from Useful Charts, which is a great channel, by the way, that you should subscribe to if you haven't already, asked, what will the Islamic world look like in the year 2121? Well, like most of the world, I imagine it being underwater or ravaged by climate-related devastation. I don't really like talking about the future because it's become very unpredictable now, since there's so many actors involved in politics, both literally and metaphorically. I would always bet on Iran dominating most of the Middle East, but you never know anymore. US or China or whatever powers exist by then might have different plans. One thing that I can say for sure is that the Islamic world will be more liberal, for the lack of a better word, at least without foreign intervention. Nothing like foreign imperialism to push people towards religious conservatism. Sam Aronow from the Sam Aronow channel asked, are there any topics you wanted to cover but found too difficult to research? Yes, there's many like that. On top of the list is one about the canonization of the Quran, with the Sana manuscript being worked on or not worked on anymore. It's become a very difficult topic to research. The human origins of the Quran, for the lack of a better word, are a fascinating subject, but sadly very difficult to research. Second topic is the schism between the Shias and the Sunnis. Everyone starts with the final days of the Prophet and ends around the assassination of Husayn ibn Ali. No one talks about the so-called Shia century and then the Sunni revival. Most of the ideas that divide Shias and Sunnis came from this century, but it's very difficult to research. Agan asked, why were the Abbasids less expansionist than Rashidun or Umayyad Caliphates, since we know that riches come from conquering land? Well, the Abbasids had a different model. They were getting rich by trade. There was pretty much nowhere left for them to conquer that could be governed. They initially tried to rule the Islamic polities in India, but that didn't work. And I think they realized that they couldn't rule so far from Baghdad. So instead of expanding, they just raided to keep their army busy while making real money from trade and production. Monarch Blue asked, what do you think about the historical revisionism regarding Islamic history, and how do you plan on continuing to break this tradition? Finally, what are the go-to non-biased introductions for Islamic history? Historical revisionism is certainly bad. I always say that one should admit the crimes committed by their forefathers and teach them to their children so that those crimes are not repeated. Though, to be completely honest, I'm not sure really how I can do more to fight it. I myself have biases, and I try to make up for them the best I can. I like to think that I have made a difference, however small, and I'm planning on continuing this in different languages, starting with Urdu. I've made like a couple of videos in Urdu, and I've already realized a problem there. I'm sort of afraid to touch the more controversial topics in Urdu because people are not going to receive them well. And so I think that that's probably where maybe the impact that I would have otherwise is going to be diminished. History for You asked, do you have plans to make videos on topics other than Islam, such as the Renaissance or how Industrial Revolution occurred in England, the Black Death, etc.? Would love to see these topics covered as well. Not really. I will make some videos on some non-Islamic empires, such as the Marathas and the Sikh Empire, but I'm not planning on covering Europe and Americas anytime soon. I think there's many YouTubers already doing a good job of it, so I'll leave it to them. John Parrott asked, what is your opinion on what's happening in Afghanistan and whether or not the Taliban can or should be legitimized or are capable of coming to the table and with concessions? Well, this question is a little bit late, I guess, now. Like when it was asked, it was okay, but now it's might be a little bit late. But well, this might be one of the places where my biases come forth the most, because I don't trust religious fundamentalists. I think they're dangerous, and I don't think that they can be reasoned with. The economy under the Taliban will almost certainly not be good. I mean, look at the people that they're appointing to the highest offices. And at that point, they'll turn to whatever they can, including attacking neighboring countries. So I think they'll soon devolve into a rogue state. Garabik asked, what is a Mamluk Sultanate? Well, that's simple. It's a sultanate that is run by former slave soldiers. There were two prominent ones, one in India and one in Egypt. Hashir Salim asked, have you considered making content on the future of Islam rather than its past? Not really. I think of it as very clickbaity content that's not really full of information, rather mostly guesses and opinions, and I'd leave it to the pundits to do that. It's like that saying goes that the only thing humans are worse at than not killing each other is predicting the future. So I think I would lose a little bit of respect for myself if I make a video about the future of the Islamic world. Abul Rahim Nasser asked, thoughts on the Corsican Sardinian flag, its history, and is it racist? Yeah, it's very racist. It's got a long history, so I'm sure we'll have similar situation to the Confederate flag in the US, where people will argue that it's about their heritage, but still, it's quite inappropriate in the modern world. It's an artifact from the past that doesn't really have any space in the modern world, I think. Khushnud Ghori asked, if there will be any caliphate in the modern times, which city would be the capital? That depends on, obviously, who revives it. Like I said, I don't like talking about the future, but here's how I would revive the caliphate. And if you see this happening on the news, you know where they got the idea. You know, the Prophet's original seal was lost by Caliph Uthman. It fell down in a well. If I was a politician in Saudi Arabia, let's say Mohammed bin Salman, I would claim to have found it during excavation and launch a propaganda campaign as it being a sign from God and then declare a caliphate. So there we go. That's how I would do it. And in that case, I guess Riyadh would be the capital. Well, what's the capital of Saudi Arabia? Whatever it is, I think that would be the capital, I guess. YROBTSVT. What, are you related to Elon Musk? Well, anyway, they asked, why do you hate Tamerlane more than any other conqueror? I don't quite hate him more than any other conqueror. He fits in a category of people who raided India, all of whom I hate. These are not conquerors, but rather people who raided India, who came to India, looted it, and then just left. Included in the list are people such as Nader Shah and Ahmad Shah Abdali. Most of what I say about Tamerlane, though, is just joking. I'm kind of dramatic, and people who know me well know that I often jokingly overreact. My bashing of him sort of started as a recurring or running joke on the channel, but people just think that I hate him more than I hate any other person in history. I don't really, and like obviously, I'm just being dramatic. Abel asked, is there a meaning to the channel name Al-Muqaddimah? Does the channel icon / avatar have any meaning as well? It seems like it is some sort of stylized language. Well, yeah, Al-Muqaddimah is the introduction to Ibn Khaldun's history. Basically, it is now a book in itself. It was the first book that made me critical about history. Before it, I just read whatever and believed whatever. Al-Muqaddimah, I guess, can be considered the foundation of the modern field of historical studies. The logo is just Al-Muqaddimah written in the Arabic Kufic calligraphy. I do calligraphy in my free time. It's also based on the face of the first picture of a Muslim. This coin right here is called the Standing Caliph coin, and it was issued by Abdul Malik. Here he is pictured, and it's the first picture of a Muslim, like I mentioned. I really like this coin, and I'd love to buy one someday, so if you want to fund that, you can make a pledge on Patreon. Nahid Hassan asked, "You are so butthurt about Judeo-Christian dominance in the world today and their colonial past. Why don't you make content about the tyranny of Muslim empires?" Well, don't I already create content about that? I've never tried to sugarcoat whatever happened. But in any case, the reason that I'm choosing to answer this question is because I am more butthurt about the term Judeo-Christian. What does that term even mean? Jews and Christians are so far from each other. Judaism is closer to Islam than it is to Christianity, and Christians have persecuted Jews for as long as they have existed. Muslims have too, but mostly Muslims were nicer to Jews than Christians were. I have no idea why people use this term. Just say white European, you mean white European. Kalamu Tariq asked, "How do you make your videos?" Well, Adobe Creative Suite and a lot of programming. I make my maps in Adobe Illustrator and I animate everything in Adobe After Effects. There's a lot of tutorials available on YouTube if you want to start. Start with Mount MoGraph or Video Copilot. Waqar Mushwani asked, "How was present Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India at the time of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and is there any record of Arab migration to these areas? Because majority claim we came from Syria or Iraq. Any explanation on that?" Muslims all over the world claim descent from the Arabs. Many even claim descent from the family of the Prophet. There is a lot of evidence that Arab traders lived in South India and China, but most Muslims on the Indian subcontinent have more Indian and Persian blood than they do Arab. Matthias Rau asked, "First, from a historian's perspective, how is the process of approaching this type of philosophical study, such as Ibn Khaldun and Averroes? How can we investigate Islamic influence in Europe? Who's your favorite philosopher other than Ibn Khaldun? Do you plan on exploring more thinkers in the future?" Well, initially, for the channel, I wanted to make a video on one thinker every month, but that didn't work out because I don't like reading that much. And in terms of how we can investigate Islamic influence in Europe, that's a bit of a complicated question, but there's many interesting books about that. You can follow me on Instagram for book recommendations. Stealing from Saracens by Diana Dark is a good book to start. It talks about how Islamic architecture inspired European architecture. And my favorite philosopher other than Ibn Khaldun is probably Averroes, because I've only read a few. I've read Ibn Khaldun, Averroes, and I don't know if he can be counted as a philosopher, but Nizamul Mulk and his Siyasatnama. Civil War, Week by Week, which is, by the way, a great channel you should check out, asked, "What was your initial plans for the channel?" Initially, like I've mentioned so many times before, I didn't really think that I'd be able to dedicate as much time as I do to the channel. I always thought that it would be a hobby and never financially sustainable. Almost everyone I know thought that the audience is niche and I won't be able to make a really successful channel. So initially, I saw myself making one video a month or so. Now things have changed and, well, it's getting better. Initially, I wanted to cover in a similar style to Sam Aronow. I wanted to go chronologically, but over time things have changed and now you can see the channel as it is now. Some random person with too many numbers in his Instagram handle asked over on Instagram, "How much is the Jewish lobby paying you to make Islam liberal?" I think the fact that I don't live on a yacht or have a harem can tell you that it's clearly not enough. Guru Azram asked, "Do you think if the Mu'tazila became the dominant interpretation of Islam, Islam wouldn't have many of the problems it does? If not, which interpretation would you favor instead?" It's a difficult question to answer. There's sort of this overly simplistic image in people's mind that the Mu'tazila were the reasonable ones and the Ash'ari were the religiously conservative ones, but that's really not true. It was merely a contest over power. I'd argue that the Shias maintained some of the major points of the Mu'tazila, but even they didn't do much better than the Sunnis. So I don't think that it comes down simply to the Ash'ari versus Mu'tazila. It comes down to many, many things. And it just doesn't, it doesn't just expand to the Islamic world. I think most of the world other than the West had these problems post, let's say, 15th or 16th century. Ibn Haydari asked, "Your opinions on male-only kings in Islam and blood dynasties. Varies a bit everywhere, but across the Muslim world, it is the same." In the modern world, I'm against monarchies. especially male-only monarchies. But I guess in the past, there's no way to avoid a dynasty. Almost every single kingdom or empire that I can think of that tried some sort of democracy with maybe only the nobles voting or stuff like that, almost always they devolved into a dynasty, officially or unofficially. So I don't think that in the past monarchies could be avoided, but in the modern world, I am very much against them. So that was all the questions that I was asked. So yeah, I guess I will be covering all those topics that people asked about. Other than that, I thank you very much, everyone, for being here through the third year of Al-Muqaddima, and I look forward to seeing you in the fourth. Thank you especially to my patrons for supporting the channel. Without them, the channel would really simply not be possible. So if you want to support the channel, pledge a dollar or more over on Patreon, or become a member right here on YouTube, you can do that. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.